Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We have an exciting one for you today because we're talking about go-to-market strategy and why go-to-market strategy is something that a lot of companies think they have, but most of them don't at all. And if you don't have a true go-to-market strategy, you're just not going to hit your revenue target. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how a true go-to-market strategy will help you hit your revenue target. She's a 25-year Silicon Valley go-to-market and marketing strategy expert, and using the GRIT marketing method, she helps B2B companies boost revenue growth by accelerating pipeline. She's worked at large enterprise public companies as well as bootstrapped early and late series startups, and she helps companies define, develop, and implement successful go-to-market and marketing strategies that lead to higher revenue, funding, and IPOs. Christina Del Villar, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and excited to talk about, you know, maybe a bit of a controversial topic these days. It's exciting, but it's potentially controversial. So,
sure. But that makes for the best podcast. I can't wait. And before I dive in, there's one little piece that just makes you that extra bit interesting. And it's that career path that you wanted to take when you were younger and how it sort of led you to a different place and you wanted to be a fighter pilot. Tell me a little bit about that before we get
into the market. Gosh. Yeah. So I love flying. I love being in the air. It's for me and just the exhilaration of it. So I always thought that like being a fighter pilot would be kind of cool. I mean, minus, you know, the fact that maybe you're actually harming other human beings. But the exhilarating part of it was pretty exciting. But that was at a time when women actually were not allowed to be fighter pilots. So instead of that, I decided to go into marketing, which is, you know, it has its own challenges. And we like to drop bombs and stuff as well there. a bit of a shift. But yeah, I didn't really want to be in the military. I just really wanted to fly really cool planes.
Right? Yeah, I got that. Cool. Well, let's dive into it. So one of the key areas of expertise or kind of tools that you bring to the companies that you work with is this go-to-market strategy audit. Tell me, if we're thinking from the perspective of a company with us today and they want to audit their own stuff, how do we do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I think you've had some amazing guests on like Sangram, who talks about go-to-market strategy and like what this means. And he has a process and some steps to that. And I think he would also agree that a lot of companies actually don't have a true go-to-market strategy these days. And that's a huge problem because if you're not in alignment, not collaborating with the rest of the organization to reach whatever your true north, your revenue target, whatever it is that your objectives and goals are for the company, overall, then it's going to be really hard to reach those or potentially to scale, you know, at a 2-5 times rate or have some exponential growth. And so for me, just understanding what a go-to-market strategy is for a company and what it means for a company to have one in place is kind of the first step, right? And I go into a lot of companies who, you know, they'll be like, okay, this is our go-to-market strategy. And I'm like, this is an amazing sales plan, or this is a great tactical marketing plan, but they're not go-to-market strategies. And I think that this is where companies are failing right now to have that exponential growth is to be, thinking more tactically instead of strategically. So when I go in and do these audits, what I really want to do is understand, do they have a true strategy? And if so, that's great. Then we can take a look at that. I also think that the strategy itself, I'm not saying you need to change it, you know, every quarter, but you should be looking at it and understanding like what metrics you're trying to measure and where you are against those. And it totally depends on your sales cycle. If your sales cycle is like 24 months, then maybe you don't need to look at it quarterly. But these are things that you need to be thinking about, how often you're looking at the strategy if you have one. So those are kind of the first things that I do when I start the audit.
Yeah. And what are kind of the markers that help you determine whether you've got a marketing plan, a sales plan, or a go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So for me, a strategy is sort of a longer term strategy, right? I mean, it's a plan that you're going to put in place, and it's maybe 2, 3, 5 years down the road, right? So that's kind of a really good indicator. Is if you're looking at how to reach your revenue target for a quarter, that's probably not a go-to-market strategy, right? Because you need to be thinking more holistically. The mm-hmm. other area that I always find really interesting is the, you know, when I look at a go-to-market strategy, I want to think about it across the entire customer journey, right? So what's happening in product, what's happening in sales, what's happening in marketing, what's happening in customer success and beyond once the customer is purchased and onboarded. And if the strategy is only focused on one of those pieces, again, it's not a strategy, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a plan. And again, those are great, right? But you need to start with your strategy, then start building your tactical and components in the plan around that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a perfect place to go from here. So we understand kind of looking at it, looking and kind of assessing, auditing what we've got so far. We can identify like, okay, no, we've got a couple of quarter sales plan here. We don't have a go-to-market strategy. So first, let's build that long-term plan. Let's figure out who all the stakeholders are in so that it maps to this customer journey. Yeah. And let's build the strategy. Walk us through how to build that from scratch if we are doing that.
Yeah, you know, and it really depends on the structure. Some of your guests have talked about this as well, like who actually owns the go-to-market strategy, right? And at the end of the day, it's your CEO. They are responsible for the growth of your company. So they should own the strategy. But of course, they don't have the time to sort of, you know, get into the nuances of it. You know, they can say, this is what I want at the end of the day. But generally, most companies will have other leaders take control of that strategy. And so I think the first key thing to think about is there a true owner of that strategy, right? And it could be the CMO, it could be the CRO, it could be the CEO, COO. Oftentimes, people own pieces of it, but there's not one person at the end of the day who actually owns that. And all of these folks come in and out of the mix to help guide the strategy along the way, which is really critical. And you definitely want that. So for me, it's really figuring out, I call it a tiger team, right? Who is on this team, whether it's leaders or executors or managers that are actually going to think about what this longer term strategy looks like and what those different teams that work with them, you know, what their responsibilities are going to be. And again, it can be a mix of people. You know, I've worked in larger organizations like at Oracle, where we pulled in like 50 different people and had this huge team because we're going to launch a big solution. Or if you're a startup, it could maybe just be like 3 or 4 people on this team. But it's really important to sort of first formulate who is going to be on that team, because that is where that alignment and collaboration starts with. And I think that that's like a really critical area, and really like have an owner put stakes in the ground and start really owning what that strategy looks like. And then I think from my standpoint, you know, just because I've been doing this a long time, like building out those tactical plans, that's kind of the easy part. So it's really trying to get your hands around, you know, who's going to own the strategy, who's going to guide the strategy. And then after you've done that, I think it's really important to, again, to think about how often are you going to look at it or reflect on it or measure. I'm not saying, again, that you iterate on it every quarter or anything like that, but you know, if you're always thinking about what your customers are doing, where they are in the buying process and how they're using your product, you definitely want to make sure that you're incorporating some of that feedback, again, as part of that longer term strategy. Could be mm-hmm. features functionality, could be pricing, could be how you're implementing it. It could even be beyond that and looking at your entire tech stack or ecosystem and which partners you need to bring in to either implement or sort of extend the life of your product or solution.
Right. I have a couple of follow-up questions here. So when we're thinking about, pulling ourselves up and out of that tactical, having that one, the CEO be that, you know, the visionary that creates that go-to-market strategy that then, of course, they can delegate down to the leaders of those individual functions and they can build the tactical plan. What is the goal of a go-to-market strategy? Like, what is at the end of that 3 to 5 year tunnel that you're aiming towards?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, it's really funny. I started a company, one time, and they're like, we have OKRs and it's going to be great. And you can help us, you know, guide us to our end goals. And so I looked at it and they literally had 152 OKRs. And I was like, oh, wow, that's okay. So I think that if you think about that example, really, you should have one goal. Right. And I'm not here to dictate what that goal is. It could be a revenue goal. It could be a growth goal. It could be number of logos. You know, it could be, you know, kind of like a churn or how many customers you want to make sure that you're keeping year over year. It could be that you're looking at being acquired or an IPO, but you really have sort of one main goal that you need to be focused on, and your strategy should align with that, and everything you do should align with that. I often tell my team, you know, they'll come to me and they'll say, hey, can we do this, or somebody wants us to do that, and I'll say, great, will it get us to that number one end goal? And if it doesn't, then we probably shouldn't be doing it. Or if we do, then we need to reprioritize some of the other things that we are focused on. So, and again, it could be, usually it's a revenue target, which is the big thing, or, you know, exponential growth if you have investors who are looking for that. But again, that's kind of like, that is your number one goal. And so your strategy should map to that, to reaching that goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I think that ties in nicely to the idea of this iteration at whatever cadence makes sense based on your sales cycle, like you mentioned. But how do you measure if this go-to-market strategy is indeed still, you know, putting you on the right path, or whether you should reprioritize certain things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So I think your strategy, because this is a longer term strategy, right? It's in some cases it's 2 years or 5 years, and in larger organizations it might even be a 10-year plan, right? So that strategy, that number one goal, your North Star, your number one OKR, whatever you want to call it, is going to be your goal and your trajectory for quite some time, right? Your KPIs might change, right? Because you're thinking, okay, well, you know, we're focused on, let's just say, conversion, and what we really want is revenue. So you might need to go back and take a look at that, or you might need to look at how you're measuring, you know, the metrics to get you to what it is. So, you know, and then at that point, if you are not meeting those sort of shorter term goals, quarterly, usually it's quarterly or annually, again, if it's like revenue or growth based, that you need to be thinking about, like, what are we measuring the right things? And do we have the right targets in place? And those are the questions that you need to ask. And if you don't, again, all along this path that you're going on, if you have expectations, for example, that you're going to reach this revenue by this quarter and next quarter, or this revenue target annually, and you're not there, then you need to step back and not mm-hmm. change your strategy, not change your number one goal, but really understand, like, what's the implication? Maybe mm-hmm. we had a pandemic and that changed things. Maybe our customers, you know, the extension of our product is not going as far as customers want, so they're going somewhere else, right? Like, there's all these things that you need to be thinking about and measuring along the way to understand if you are on that right trajectory. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And the wheels are turning in my head, and I'm thinking about all of these things in the companies that I've worked at, and when those things happen. Like, yes, when you miss some goal, you do a thing, the outcome is not what you thought it would be, and it was what you thought was, you know, going towards this big strategic goal. Or I'm even thinking now about some of those larger goals that I've seen, like the 10-year, the 5-year, the 3-year, 1-year, and then back to those little quarterly goals or whatever they are. But the 10-year goal being something quite specific, right, but not revenue, not something like, we want to achieve X percent growth, we want to achieve this many logos, but it being more, I guess, specific. It's actually not specific is what I'm trying to say. It's like a more of an intangible thing, which then is that okay?
Yeah, that's
how
interesting.
Do you go towards that? Yeah, that's my
I mean, I think that it would have to be, personally, I feel it has to be tangible, right? Because mm-hmm. even if your goal is acquisition, that's still tangible, right? You know, if it's obviously if it's revenue, if you are looking at penetrating a new market, that's still pretty tangible and measurable.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to think of an instance where it wouldn't be. And to be honest, I don't think a strategy, again, kind of like that go-to-market strategy can be intangible.
Intangible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a great question though.
The ones that I've heard are around more like, and a sort of intangible position in the market or kind of like awareness,
a magic quadrant or
yeah, that kind of stuff, which like maybe you can measure, there are measurables potentially you can put against those, but I guess maybe what it's about is taking that intangible and saying like, okay, how do we know when we're there? That's the tangible thing. That should be the goal, not this.
Exactly.
So that people can actually work towards it.
Right. And work in alignment and collaboration together as well. Mm-hmm. I think that that's why it's key to think about having one goal. And again, underneath that, you're going to have multiple goals and ways of getting there and KPIs and all that, you know, KRs and things like that. But, you know, if you, and again, people call it the North Star, like what is your main objective? And again, that shouldn't change too much. But for example, I worked with Udacity and they were very much D2C and their goal for the next 3 years, which was a good go-to-market strategy, was to penetrate the B2B market. Right. And so, but it's very tangible. It's just a huge shift in mindset and a huge shift in the product and solution. You know, the sales team, we needed to swap them out and things like that. So, but it's still a tangible goal getting there. Cause, and it was a specific, like we want X amount of revenue coming from this channel instead of that channel. So again, it's just much easier if you have that. And in that case, they still had, you know, a D2C go-to-market strategy. So there was sort of two go-to-market strategies. And this is where you sometimes run into that conflict, whether it's a conflict of, you know, mindset or a personalities in some cases, but really it's resources, right? Because let's just say we need budget to do an event, but now we're competing with the D2C market. So how do you get that alignment? How do you get that collaboration? And going back to who owns it, who makes the decision at the end of the day that if you have limited resources and you have two strategies, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And that's why there has to be one owner because
I think so. And again, it's controversial, right? And in my mind, the person who has the most insight into all of these different areas is that CMO. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, the CMO is a good person to actually own that. You know, they work with product in terms of, you know, the roadmap and features and functionality and pricing, and you know, they have a good sense of what the customers are looking for. They own the communication channel, so they get feedback from that standpoint. Obviously, they're there to help enable sales. And then from a customer success standpoint, I think I think two critical roles that are often overlooked and not supported in organizations is a product marketing person and a customer marketing person, because those two folks bridge these other areas and make it really easy to then have that collaboration and alignment. And again, sometimes product marketing person sits in the product team, sometimes they sit in the marketing team, customer marketing, sometimes they sit in customer success, sometimes they sit in marketing, but having those sort of bridges and those folks who have that, again, sort of foot in both of those areas really helps with that collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How far out do you think the goal should be of a go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that it depends on, I think, the size and again, sort of that sales cycles. But for example, I think, you know, 3 to 5 years is usually a good, because at that point, to be honest, if you are still like, if you're, you know, into, you have a specific technology, that technology might actually be obsolete in 5 years these days, right? Your customers have changed, you know, you and I, we've, you know, talked to a lot of people, and the B2B consumers, they've changed how they consume, they've changed how they've purchased, even just in the past, you know, 18 months, right? And so your strategy, in terms of that ultimate goal might not have changed, but how you're going to get there certainly might have. And so you do need to kind of continually look at that. And again, you might say this is not the right strategy for us at this point. And it could be based on, you know, like the amount of investment that you have. It might be like a skills gap issue that you have. And you just, like, for example, if you need engineers or AI engineers and you just simply can't hire them, and it's going to take a year to hire them and 6 months to onboard them, that's going to set you back a year and a half right there, right? And so you just need to be mindful of that. But I feel like 3 to 5 years is a good way to think about, like, when you, how long in advance that strategy should work. And, you know, as you know, it will continue to move forward as well. It's kind of like a rolling, you know, it's not that you're changing it, but it's not like, okay, we're at our 3-year mark. Let's start all over again, right? Yeah, we're done. Okay, I'm going on vacation. So,
and stays that distance out from you kind of at all.
Exactly. Pretty much. So, cool. Yeah.
And how do you think you decide as a company, as that go-to-market owner, what type of go-to-market strategy to take? So in terms of, like, are we going to go product-led, sales-led, marketing-led, or like that example you gave, are we going to have two go-to-market strategies that exist in parallel? How do you evaluate which of those is going to work best when you are kind of getting started?
Yeah, I think that in my mind, you should have one overarching strategy, even if you're just like a humongous organization, like an Amazon, right? If you think about, let's take Amazon, for example, right? They have obviously their books and their online sales, but they have Zappos too. And Zappos acts pretty independently. So, you know, I imagine that Zappos has its own go-to-market strategy, but it's still part of Amazon's go-to-market strategy, right? Because it's all about selling shoes in particular. You know, plus they have their Prime Video and all kinds of other divisions. And so I don't know exactly what they're doing there, but in my mind, like their ultimate strategy is probably either a revenue strategy or, you know, very specifically, you know, stock price shareholder, you know, sort of mindset there. And so what are these individual either subsidiaries, you know, companies within Amazon, organizations within Amazon, you know, what are they doing? And you kind of have to figure, like, at what point do you stop saying, okay, this group, this department has its own go-to-market strategy. Like that example that I had where there's 152 OKRs, like you just can't, like there's no alignment and collaboration there if you have 152 different basically go-to-market strategies. And it was a pretty small organization too. So I think you still have that one main go-to-market strategy and everything else is kind of working up towards that.
It reminds me of an example. I can't remember now who the person was, but somebody bought Sears and came in and adjusted the whole.
I think that maybe corporate Kmart maybe or something.
Yeah, maybe Kmart. Yeah. Yeah, he owned Kmart. He came in, he bought Sears, and he, like you're saying, with each of the divisions, he completely made them siloed and gave them their own boards of directors. they were independent businesses.
Yes.
There were something like 92 boards of directors in Sears at any one time. And obviously the company just tanked in like a couple of short years. But I think that's a prime example of there was no one overarching go-to-market strategy. Really, they were each running with equal or no priority. And then it makes it so difficult.
Yeah. And I'm working with a company now who through acquisition, let's just say they've ended up with, I don't know, 10 different companies. And it's nice that those companies have not been, you know, have been able to run independently, right? But you think about it. So let's just say there's 10 of them. Each of those 10 companies has, like you're saying, a board of directors, a CEO, a marketing organization, and a marketing budget, a sales team. And they sell similar products. There's some differentiation for sure, but you're not getting economies of scale. And like literally you have 10 marketing organizations and 10 sales organizations. And like, just if you say it out loud, you're like, well, that's silly, right? And so you need to figure out, are you going to run it as one unit, you know, and how are you going to do that and who's going to manage that? And yes, in cases like that and in cases with Kmart and Sears, it probably means a reduction in personnel. It doesn't have to be, though. It could just be that you're combining those 10 market, I'm just using marketing as an example. You're just combining them and making sure that they're still sort of working in alignment and collaboration, and have that insight into those different, I would call them divisions at that point. Unless they're literally like reporting out, independently, then you really need to start thinking about how, again, I call it, just gaining those economies of scale and being really smart with your resources, both your personnel and your budget as well.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I think that's a perfect place to kind of bring it home. If someone's listening to us right now, regardless of what role they are in kind of the leadership structure, in they're involved in the go-to-market in some way, what is the first step that you want them to take coming out of this towards improvement?
So for me, it's, again, like you're saying, it doesn't matter what level you are, what your title is, how long you've been at the company. For me, I think the key thing is really, it starts simply with building relationships, right? Building relationships, especially in other organizations, so that you have a sense of like what their commitments are, what their jobs are, having that empathy. And from there, you can start building more trust, and then you'll get more alignment, and then you'll have more collaboration. And I mean, it seems pretty simple and kind of common sense, but if you don't have a structure in place or an executive team in place that's sort of mandating that you work together and collaborate, then it's a good step. And I mean, I think it helps you as an individual just be better at your job and help other people and other organizations be better at their jobs as well. Because you're just, again, really realizing and recognizing what they're going through, what they need, and how you guys can work together, which is at the end of the day what you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
if people want to learn more from you, Christina, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
You can reach out. ChristinaDelVR.com is my website. I have a book out. You can go to swaythebook.com. That'll take you to that. And then happy to link, connect on LinkedIn or Instagram as well, which is ChristinaDelVR in both of those cases.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, Christina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah. This is great. Yeah,
pleasure speaking through this stuff. It is, as you mentioned, it's like controversial, topical, it's timely. I love talking about this stuff right now.
I know.
Yeah. Very interesting.
It's and I feel like it is, we kind of go through these cycles where, of course we need to have a strategy, right? well, that makes sense. But I think, just over time we got busy, we got a little siloed, maybe a little selfish. And it's time, I think, for companies to really sort of think about how they're building out and expanding and collaborating. Because I really think you can literally double your revenue if you're collaborating and aligning better. So that's my recommendation.
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sarah.
Once again. And thanks to all of you guys for joining us for another episode. Pleasure having you guys as well. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Christina join us and talk about interesting topics like this one. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.